Blog Talk Radio.
You have tuned in to the Brain Injury Radio Network, with shows 7 nights a week. You can find the network at braininjuryradio.com or look up Brain Injury Radio Network on Facebook.
Another Fork in the Road with your host, Donna O'Donnell Fugerski.
Hi there, and welcome to the Brain Injury Radio Network on blogtalkradio.com. My name is Donna O'Donnell Fugerski, and I'm your host on my show, Another Fork in the Road. My show airs every first and third Sunday of every month. Another Fork in the Road is for anyone with a brain injury, anyone who's caring for a brain-injured person, or anyone with any interest in learning more about brain injury. And I always hope that people will take an interest in this topic because what you don't realize is that it happens so often to folks and you're never prepared because nobody ever thinks of it. So that's what we try to do here is to bring some awareness of traumatic brain injury, and we try to help others to understand what survivors, but also their caregivers, what each of those groups of people are experiencing, and to let others know what survivors can accomplish. Because many times people will see somebody with a brain injury or hear something and they think that they can't do much of anything, but it's not true. It's not true at all. That can be they can be very accomplished people after their brain injuries too. So we talk about all of that, and there are a lot of different guests that I've talked with, and different interviews that I've done on my blog, survivingtraumaticbraininjury.com, that you can read about and find just out exactly what I'm talking about. So on previous shows, I told my husband David's and my journey through our TBI maze. I should say his, but because he had a brain injury, I'm completely affected by it too. Not physically in the same sense that he is, but yes, brain injury affects all members of a family. It reaches out. It doesn't just stop with the person and say that's it. It puts its little tentacles out there to everybody and impacts their lives as well. So, but if you want to hear the shows that I did with David and me in the very, very beginning of my journey on the Brain Injury Radio Network back in, oh my gosh, it was August of 2014, 10 years ago. Holy moly. That just blows my mind right now because I don't even think about it being so long that I've been doing this show twice a week, twice a month, every month for 10 years. So anyhow, you can go to find the shows at survivingtraumaticbraininjury.com and just click on the air show menu. And once you get there, just scroll down. And it's going to be at the very bottom because it was one of the very first shows I ever did. Or put in the date 2014 and bring up the shows from there. There's a search bar so you can, you know, get ingenious and see what you can do. Be creative. So I did 4 shows back then with David to tell our story. And then David actually did a show with me too to give his the other side of the story, I should say, the insider's view. Because, yes, I'm interpreting David's brain injury through my eyes as his caregiver. But he is living it. He's actually living through everything that's going on with the upset that happened in his brain when he had his brain injury. So it's interesting to hear how he comes across with what's happening to him. But In the beginning, when David was in a coma, he knew nothing about what was happening. So he relied on me to let him know what had happened to him, because he was out of the world and out of commission for, oh gosh, about 2-3 weeks, maybe more, probably more, because within 2 weeks he had 3 brain surgeries. And those brain surgeries, every time he'd come up and rise to the surface a little bit, the doctors, the nurse, his neurosurgeon would give him another brain surgery and knock him down into coma land. And then he'd rise back up again, and they'd say, oh, we have to do another brain surgery, and push him back down again. So for a long time, he really didn't know what was going on in his life. And even after that last and the third and last surgery, he was still really quite out of it for a long time. So I was his eyes and I was his ears at that time, and I was able to bring him up to date to know what happened at that point. But then now, of course, he can do his own talking. So anyhow, yeah. So you can also type his last name into the search box, Figurski, or David Figurski. And that will bring up those shows as well, but also a lot of other things, because David does a lot of writing for the blog. There's a lot of news articles and things like that, especially when COVID was coming out. So then I also do survivor speak out interviews, and that's where I will interview a survivor of brain injury. There are 20 questions. You can access them from my website. You don't even have to contact me first. Just access them, follow the directions on the page, send them to me, and I can give you a platform where you can tell your story through the questions. So anyway, yeah. And so on my shows, for example, on the third Sunday of the month, I always do a guest. But my guest was sick today, so we're turning things around a little bit, and we're going to do like a panel. We're going to do a panel of two today, just myself and my guest tonight. So, and we decided to make this a talk about it show, and that means we can talk about anything we want. My guest, Gail Wakin, and I have already kind of talked before the show and said we'd like to address a couple of different topics, but then we're open to anything else. So if anybody wants to pop in and ask a question, please do. The number is 424-243-9540. And if you come in, I will give you some airtime, and you can ask a question of either Gail Wakin or me, or give your comment about what's happening in your life with brain injury. So on some shows, like I said, I have guests, and I often have therapists or medical professionals. I have authors. I love to get authors on the show, because they've written up their stories, and they have given so much thought to it, and it gives so much insight and info to other people who are going through the same kinds of things, because all brain injury is not the same. It's all different. But we can all relate to something that somebody's going through. There is a lot of overlap. So that's always fun to hear, interesting and informative, I think, to hear how other people are addressing their brain injury, how they are managing their lives throughout it. So that's, you know, I'm hoping that this, you know, these professionals that come on will help you that way. And then on the first Sunday of each month, I do a panel of, and we do have a topic usually, but we also do some talk about it there too, where anything can come up and we can talk about anything. And, but those, you know, those are people that have had a brain injury or are caregivers, and they give up their time, they volunteer their time, as I do, to come on here and just let the world know more about brain injury. I think it's so important that we do that, because, as I said earlier, brain injury can happen to anyone, and it does, and you're never expecting it. And I know for me, I never even heard of it. I didn't even know about brain injury. Yes, I know about cancer. I know about diabetes. I know about Parkinson's and Alzheimer's. I know about MS, and I know about tons and tons and tons of other afflictions that people have to live through. But I didn't know about brain injury, and amazing. That's the one that I've been spending the past 19 years focusing on since my husband had his in 2005. So if we can lend any insight to you prior to having a brain injury, that is wonderful. Or prior to you being a caregiver or you knowing a friend or a family member that has a brain injury, that's great. We hope that we can give, you know, shed some light on some questions that you might have or just some give you some information that you may never have even thought about asking. So anyhow, we're going to get started now. I hope that you're going to find my show fun and informative, of course. And I hope that you'll visit the shows of the other hosts on the Brain Injury Radio Network. There are shows every night from 7 to 10 p.m. Pacific time. Every weekday night, I should say, from 7 to 10 Pacific time. And on the weekends, we have shows that start at 5:30 p.m. The 5:30 runs almost till 7, till 6:50, and then at 7 o'clock, you go on to that 7 o'clock time show again. So they run all the way to 10 o'clock. So there's always something out here to tune into if you want to learn more about brain injury. And new different hosts for each of those shows. So check it out, folks. Brain Injury Radio airs across the United States, in every state, and it airs in 36 countries. But I think the best part of the whole thing is it turns into a podcast after the show goes live. So it's live in all those places, but then it turns into a podcast so it doesn't go away. And that's where you can go to survivingtraumaticbraininjury.com and go to On the Air show menu to find all of my shows. I have more than 200 shows in the past 10 years. And then you can also go to braininjuryradio.com. Actually, go first to blogtalkradio.com/braininjuryradio. And then, again, if you want to find shows, my shows, type in my last name, Figursky, type in Another Fork in the Road, or go to the menu and see what shows are there from the different different hosts. So you got a lot to listen to. You'll never be out of a show if you really want to learn more about brain injury. So on subsequent shows, I interviewed the traumatic brain injury survivors and caregivers, and I delve into, I actually kind of told you that. I delve into their journeys to see how they traverse their world of brain injury. So from that point on, we're just going to get started, I think. I'm going to ask you to sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. And now I want to give you a little bit of information about what this show is going to be about today. So I call this the Talk About It show. And again, we can talk about anything. So it's time for another open session of Talk About It, where panel members and I talk about whatever comes up. So there's really no agenda tonight. Although I did mention that Gail and I kind of talked before the show, and there are a couple topics that we're going to we'll start with, and then we'll see where it takes us. So please join us at our table at our virtual coffee shop. There's room for everyone. You can all listen in. Be a fly on the wall. So let's get started. I want to welcome my friend Gail Waitkin. Hi, Gail, and welcome back to Another Fork in the Road.
Thank you, Donna. It's a pleasure to be here. I really enjoy coming on and sharing.
Oh, thank you. It's always fun to have you on the show. I really enjoy that, too. You always give so much good information that the people can just go and use the next day. You know, I mean, there's a lot of food for thought that we're going, you know, that you've given us in previous interviews. Gail's been on my panel several times. So, again, if you go to my blog and you want to hear more about Gail, more about what she has to say, she does have a survivor's interview up on the blog. So that's a good place to start. Read her 20 questions, the 20 question answers. And also, she did a blog, a what is this called? another Fork in the Road show that was dedicated solely to Gail. And we learned a lot about her then. You're going to learn a lot more about her today. But you can always go back there and listen to that if you find some things that say, geez, I need to know more about her. I want to contact her, or I want to find out what she's up to. So, yeah. So, anyhow, Gail Waitkin is a certified Institute for Integrative Nutrition Health Coach and a traumatic brain injury survivor. Actually, she's a thriver. She's a TBI thriver who has turned advocate, an advocate who wants to help other people get through this this maze is what I always call it. It's a maze of living through TBI, because you never quite know where the next turn is going to take you. So after experiencing the challenges of isolation following a devastating accident, Gail now dedicates herself to helping others who suffer from post-traumatic brain injury regain their confidence, their enthusiasm, and their focus. And I have to just insert here, Gail is the recipient of, I think she said, 12 brain injuries. That's a lot of brain injuries throughout her years. And the last brain injury, which happened in 2015, if I remember correctly, was from a whiplash in a car accident that caused probably the most devastating results with her brain. And we'll talk a little bit more about that when we get Gail to give us a quick little info commercial here. So as the author of the best-selling book, Heal Your TBI, The 7-Step Approach for Recovering from a Traumatic Brain Injury, Gail provides valuable insights into the journey of TBI recovery. I've read the book. It's great. And if you want to hear more about that book, as I said, Another Fork in the Road interview, which happened in 2021, and boy, do I remember the date? Of course not. I know it's 2021. But like I said, you can go, I'm going to look it up right now for you anyhow, but you can go right to my blog and find it. Gail Waitkin on 12/19/21 is Gail's interview on the Brain Injury Radio Network. And so she talks in depth about her brain injury as well as her book. So you can find out a whole lot more there, because it's really got a wealth of information. And Gail has authored 2 additional books. One is called The Concussion Conversation Starter. Say that fast, it's hard. The Concussion Conversation Starter. And she also did the Concussion Conversation Tracker Journal. And Gail has appeared on several podcasts, including this one, Another Fork in the Road, both as a guest and as a very knowledgeable panelist. And I said that again many times. She's been on the show as a panelist. Gail resides in Falmouth, Maine, is an avid lover of horses and the outdoors, and she is rarely seen without her devoted Havanese companion, Bosco. So, Gail, welcome to the show again, officially now. Hi, Gail. How are you?
Oh, my goodness. I'm great. Thank you so much. You're so kind. You're very generous with your compliments, and I really appreciate that.
Thank you. I appreciate you being on, and just eager to hear what we're going to come up with today. So, like I said, we have no real agenda. But let's go back, and I want to just ask you first, can you just talk a little bit about who you were before you had your brain injury? And then we're going to get into a little bit about how you're dealing with it now.
Well, I guess my short story is, you know, I've since identified a quote that I like to start out with, the one where Winston Churchill said, if you're going through hell, keep going. So, you know, I'd been going through a real tough time, and things finally got fun for me, and I was in pursuit of a nursing degree. I was in the clinical phase of that, and my plan was to do the nursing that would be required as being part of a bike trekking team in Europe. That's what I wanted to do. I wanted to have an EpiPen and my cell phone and the ability to travel and see the countryside and eat the food and meet new people and just in general have a great time. That didn't happen. And what did happen was I was in a car accident, as you mentioned, and I had a whiplash. And within 3 days' time, my symptoms morphed into those symptoms that one would read when reading a list of all the things that someone with a traumatic brain injury experiences. So, you know, I would stand in front of the refrigerator with the door open and wonder what I was doing there. Meanwhile, the eggs would be burning on the stove. You know, I really went down into a deep place of being highly compromised from my brain injury. And I lived alone, so no one really knew how bad I was, including my doctor, except he did see me on a weekly basis, and he would take my blood pressure and ask me how I was and then proceed to tell me stories about other patients who had had brain injuries and didn't get better very quickly. And because of my age, which at the time was 60 years of age, he said that I probably wouldn't get that much better. So that didn't sit well with me. And before my brain injury, I was very active. I was an athlete. I was very active my entire life, which is why I had so many brain injuries. You know, you fall down skiing. We didn't wear helmets then. You fall off horses. You know, so I was a very rambunctious kid, and one of my first injuries was when I went over the handlebars of a bicycle and was knocked out for 3 hours. So there are a lot of different times, I can count them all, walking into my father who was shoveling, and the shovel went into my head. So the person before this last time was someone who had, yes, incurred many hits on the head. And like a football player, you know, I hopefully don't have CTE. I'm not going to go down that avenue. But I wasn't bouncing back the way I had before. And that became extremely distracting for me.
Wow, I can imagine how it would have been. I want to just clarify CTE because you mentioned that. CTE is chronic traumatic encephalopathy, and it's damage to the brain that it cannot be diagnosed until after death. But it's something that they are locating in the brains of football players that have had subsequent concussions multiple times. And I can tell you the first person that they diagnosed was Bill Webster, Pittsburgh Steelers. I don't know what his position was, but he was a very renowned Pittsburgh Steeler. If you're from Pittsburgh, you knew who Bill Webster was. And Mike Webster. I'm sorry, I think it was Mike Webster. I'm getting the name wrong.
I'm
from Pittsburgh. I know, and I'm from Pittsburgh. I should not be getting that name wrong. So when Mike died and they did an autopsy of his brain, they did find the CTE, which is the damage in the brain that is not repairable. It's you know, so, and you, like I said, it causes horrible things to a person that's happening. I know another person, a friend of mine, whose husband I think was a 49er, San Francisco 49er. I think that's what team he's on. Anyhow, he ended up with CTE also, and that drove him to drinking, to overdosing on drugs. It just was overwhelming. His life was just a disaster after he had so many concussions. So when you say that, Gail, that you've had that many concussions, you know, it's and you lived and it functioned through so many of them, having the 12th one be the frosting on the cake or the straw that broke the camel's back, maybe, you know,
my tipping point.
Like, Yes, yeah, you did tip over that edge just at that point. You know, and I'm reading here when you're in your interview on surviving traumatic brain injury, the question was, what kind of rehab did you have and how long were you in? That's not the question. The problem is, what problems or disabilities did you incur? And this is from your book. From your book, Heal Your TBI, and it goes in alphabetical order, and I think there, I started to count them, and I lost count at 30 because I was, doing a dual concentration here. But there are probably about 30 or 40 things here, including loss of taste, inability to drive, loss of confidence, memory problems. You mentioned that already. What, when you went to the refrigerator and couldn't remember what you were going to get there, but also forgot the eggs burning on the stove. The pain, unexplained pain, problems in judgment, sadness. You mentioned that too, being sad over this thing. Trouble holding on to new information. So many things, and I'm not going to go through all of these. Dizziness, I could go through all of them because I want to talk about all of them, but we can't. We never have enough time. But, you know, these are the kinds of things that happen to people with a brain injury that people don't understand, okay? Because you cannot see that you are having dizziness. I can't see it. You might be having it, but I don't know that. I cannot see that that you have a loss of confidence, and yet you said you do. You said you have you had a loss of confidence, but I can't see that. I can't see your memory problems. I might be able to see your pain if you're exhibiting pain, but I can't tell if you have peripheral vision problems. I can't tell. I would know if you're stuttering or have slurred speech. I would notice that. But I can't tell if you're having trouble making and holding eye contact when speaking to somebody else, or having errors in your writing and having spelling issues. I can't tell any of that. And since you are not displaying physical disabilities, and I don't think you are because you didn't mention anything here, and I think in our past we've talked that you're not, I'm not seeing that you're limping or that you have an ataxic hand. I don't see that your face is screwed up because of a stroke, you know, and how sometimes the face goes up on one side. So how do we know you have a brain injury? You know, that's what people think. That's what they think. They have no clue. Well, folks, what we want to talk about today is invisible brain injury. Because, yes, a visible brain injury that is physical is easy to determine. If you look at my husband, David, you will know that something happened to him. You might not know exactly what happened, but if he tells you he had a brain injury, you're going to put it all together because his balance is terribly impaired. He has a very difficult time walking on his own. He has an ataxic hand where the right hand has a mind of its own. David cannot really control that hand. It goes wherever it wants to go. It's great for back rubs. So I take advantage of that sometimes. But for David, we can see that there's definitely a brain injury. There's something wrong there. Now, for many people, like all the things I just mentioned that Gail was talking about, you can't see. I can't see that she's indecisive. I can't see that she's hypersensitive to things. So many people don't think that somebody that is not displaying signs of brain injury has a brain injury. But in fact, they do. And so that makes it really difficult. It makes it difficult for folks to commiserate, maybe, to be empathetic, maybe even show a little sympathy. Not that anybody really wants a pity party, but we do like the understanding. People do like to have people understand what they're going through. And although people aren't going to completely understand, it's always nice to be able to have some empathy, something, well, geez, I don't really know what you're going through, but I I'm sorry, or whatever. I don't know. Sorry doesn't really help anything, but you know what I mean? Acknowledge it. What is your thought, Gail?
Well, for me, you know, I've just come so far, and I have to say to people who are listening who are frightened or fearful or angry, confused, frustrated, any of those things because you've experienced a brain injury or you're watching someone you love go through impatience and anger and all these good things that come along with a brain injury, you should know that you can get better. And and I have experienced that. And I can remember, Donna, when I first started, the first time I spoke with you on the show, that I had a really hard time putting, you know, three words together. And it was very difficult for me to follow or respond to other people that were on the show.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it would be very interesting for myself, although I'm not going to do this right now, but to go back and listen. You know, I've never listened to myself re-listened, but I think it would be an interesting it would be an interesting thing for me to do, and possibly for others, to see how I've changed over time, and I'm getting closer and becoming more of myself every day. And I've done this by the invisibility of the brain injury has brought me to a point where I needed to do things that were invisible, you know, so not being able to put three words together, not being able to take part in a conversation, not being able to start a story and finish it. I had to force myself into situations that made me do that. And as far as the invisibility goes, I believe that we have this problem because, number one, the people who are experiencing the brain injury have a real inability to do a number of things. The one thing we have a hard time doing is identifying exactly what it is that's troubling us. For instance, I had a lower back issue that I wasn't even aware of and for 6 months. So after car accident, the whiplash, oftentimes with a whiplash, you will get a lower back injury. Now, that was never checked. And I think that should be part of a protocol that when someone comes in who's been in a car accident, we don't just look at their head. You know, maybe we should look at the rest of their body. So invisibility, one thing you can put in the column of things that are invisible, perhaps. But because we can't articulate in real time sometimes all those things that we're troubled about, our inability to express ourselves, to find the right words for what we want to say, we start out to say something and then, oh my goodness, where did the word go? And then you get embarrassed. And then you look at the person you're talking to and you can see that they're looking at you with genuine concern or, you know, if it's a family member, they're like, oh, my God, here we go again. You know, you have to deal with impatience. Uh-huh. It's just a lot of different things. So what we end up doing, because we are either experiencing shame, embarrassment, disappointment, and it's a disappointment in ourselves sometimes because we knew we should have kept our mouth shut. It's just so much easier to keep your mouth shut than bring all that confusion and turmoil to the present. So we stay quiet. And when we stay quiet, then other people don't know what's going on with us. And when we tell other people what's going on with us, sometimes you get the eyes rolling, you know. Other times you'll get someone to say, well, you look fine. It makes you feel like, oh, my goodness, I'm trying to share something with you right now. I'm having a genuine problem expressing myself exactly the way I need to so you understand what I need you to know, and they dismiss it. So that's the invisibility for me. You know, that's what's been that's what it's meant for me. And also, because we have this problem expressing ourselves, or we forget what we need to say when we go to the doctor, the doctor doesn't know what needs to be addressed. So the medical
right.
community, or the whole community of people who are out there waiting to help us, they don't know what they should be doing because we haven't told them exactly what's going on. So this has been historically a very hard thing for people to wrap their brains around because
yeah.
the information hasn't been out there.
Exactly. You know, and so you're talking about a catch-22 situation. You as, and I'm saying you collectively, survivors aren't always able to express or get across, communicate what they need to their medical professionals, and the medical professionals aren't adept enough to know what to ask about the brain injury. And I think that we've been talking about this for a lot of years now, especially when David had his brain injury in 2005. That's what, 19 years ago. Yours was 9 years ago. That's already some time, quite a bit of time passed. But especially 19 years ago, not a whole lot was known about the functioning and the workings of the brain. We've studied the body. Health scientists and the medical profession has studied the body, and they're getting a really good handle on the body. I mean, just think about cancer in the 50s when it was the big C word. Everybody was like, oh, cancer, you're going to die. You know, it's just horrible. But, you know, we're talking, like, what is that, 50 years ago now. And look at all the research that has been done on cancer, all the learning that has been gained from the research. And people aren't as afraid of that C word as they used to be because there are a lot of ways to cure it. Not pleasant ways, but there are ways that they can, attack it. And get you better. You can go into remission. You can, you know, fight this cancer. Not for everybody. I'm not saying that, but I'm just saying that it's on the rise where the science is working and people are learning about it. Brain injury is something that is relatively new to our vocabulary, I think almost. It's been there. It's been there, but nobody ever talked about it. I mean, obviously it's been there. I don't think there's anybody walking around in this world that has gone to 60 or 70 years of age that hasn't had a brain injury, to tell you the truth. I mean, if you think about how many kids every day today fell off their bike and hit their head, how many fell off a swing or the merry-go-round that runs in the sand in the playground or on the metal, on the concrete ground. You know, I think everybody has probably had some initiation with a concussion, but it may not have been so bad that it caused you a horrible, horrible brain injury. But what we're doing now is finally starting to learn more about it. And I think that happened around, 2010, 11, 12. And I don't remember the years. I should probably know that in my facts, but I don't know it right off. But that's when they started to talk about, the time I'm talking about is when they started to talk about the troops coming home from the Middle Eastern wars. And they were coming home with IED explosion brain injuries from those explosions and things like that. And then there was also, as I mentioned earlier, the football players with the concussions, and that used to be on the news every night. It was on the news for months and months and months. And then the troops, all the same thing, months and months and months. So all you were hearing about was brain injury, concussion, CTE, you know, all this kind of stuff. But I think that's what got the ball rolling on it, and it started to become more of a household term where people were recognizing it a little bit more. They were understanding it a little bit more. When you have Junior Seau, he was a football player, and I forget from what team now, but he did commit suicide. He did have CTE. in his brain, which was messing with his mind. It was really messing up his mind. But he committed suicide, but he didn't shoot himself in the head as most people might think. He shot himself, I think, in the chest so that he could save his brain for science, so that they could study his brain. And yes, they did study it. They did find CTE. And they're able to, you know, use these brains to figure out what concussion is actually doing to a person's brain. So all of that kind of stuff is has been, you know, helpful that we are starting to learn more about it. You know, you also said something about, two things I wanted to address. You said people are saying, but you look fine, you know, and I think that can be taken two ways. And the way I heard you say it was that they were dismissing you. And that is a way a lot of survivors will take that kind of a comment. But you look fine. Well, why can't you do this? You know, you slept yesterday. You had a nap earlier. Why can't you go out now? Okay, that's different. Take that, erase that whole statement. Let's just go back to the fine statement. I think, and there are more statements like that. That's what I was trying to bring up off the top, but I obviously failed. I think what's happening is people also are trying to reassure you. I know that because I would do that with David, and I was not dismissing his problems or his disability. I would say, but, you know, you look like you're having a fine day, you know, or whatever. And I'm just encouraging him. Basically, that's my gut inside feeling to do that. And I think a lot of people do that to try to reassure their loved one, their survivor, their care recipient, their friend who has a brain injury. A lot of times people are doing that. I guess you have to take it in context, the way it was said, but I know a lot of people say that, and a lot of survivors will take it as a dismissal, like, well, yeah, you look fine, you don't have, you know, I can't see anything wrong with you, so you must be fine. But also, I think that it also can be taken that way, so it has to be determined through tone and through the conversation and everything like that. But I don't think I think a lot of times people are uncomfortable with the situation and they're trying to maybe ease their own discomfort with it. Or I don't know. There's a lot that goes into just those three words, you look fine. And do you know what I'm saying? Do you understand what I'm getting at?
Yeah, I absolutely do understand what you're saying. I've written about that specifically.
Okay.
And you know, I do know that when someone says that to me, they're being empathetic. They think.
Uh-huh.
But I have decided that when, in the interest of help people better understand how someone with a brain injury is affected by that statement, I share with them, you know, I know that you're telling me that because you'd like to make me feel better and
right.
That you understand. But the fact that you're saying that to me means that you truly don't understand.
Yeah.
And that makes me feel even more isolated. And
okay. Go ahead.
Does that make sense
to you? Yes, it does. Absolutely.
You know, because it is not acknowledging the fact that I have a discomfort or a concern or a problem that's related to my brain injury that I have just shared. That's usually what elicits that comment.
Mm-hmm.
I can't even tell, you know, you look fine. And then
yeah,
that's what happens. So I guess I share that because people need to know that. And
mm-hmm.
I know that I'm not the only one who thinks that. David probably didn't like it either.
Yeah.
But that's part of it. But the invisibility...
Exactly.
The invisibility is something that I really want to go away. And I want it to go away by there being a comprehensive way of analyzing, diagnosing someone who's had a brain injury. And that mm-hmm. means really going in a systematic way with different tests, whether it be having a cranial sacral work to determine whether or not, you know, your skull is in alignment where it should be
mm-hmm.
so that your cerebral brain fluid is flowing properly. You know, so when you get neurofeedback, you know, that can work properly. There's just so many different layers, as you said, to the brain, and I'm hoping that with
yeah.
the use of AI, we're going to be able to
uh-huh.
maybe peel back the layers and the interconnectedness of all these different things that make us us. Because when you hurt your heart and I hurt my heart, two different surgeons will probably pick, say we have the same injury. They're two talented surgeons will pick the same procedure to fix us, and it will work. But when I hurt
mm-hmm.
my head and you hurt your head, we're two entirely different personalities. So my common sense tells me that there's a lot of other things that need to be looked at before we can go forward and say that you're cured. We can't just use
yeah.
one thing. And because there's that layer of invisibility,
mm-hmm.
people will leave a doctor's office after doing a series of treatments and they still don't feel right. But because the doctor has done what he's supposed to do and the family has seen you go and do those treatments.
Yeah.
And now John isn't acting right in school. And, you know, the teacher or the parents might think that John's doing this on purpose because he just doesn't want to take the test. Meanwhile, they haven't
yeah.
really looked at why John doesn't want to take the test, because my goodness, he went to the doctor. He did.
Yeah.
He went through all the therapies and they've said that, you know, he's better and he probably is
yeah.
a little better, but he's not better. So
yeah,
there's a lot of invisibility to the brain injury that we need to look at.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with you. And your comment about when going back to the fine, I like the way you explain it to people because that's the only way they're going to know. You know, yes, I think that they were saying it to be empathetic, but they didn't understand what it was doing to you and what it was making you feel and how that. But by your talking to them and telling them that you really don't understand if you think I'm fine, you know, that kind of thing, I think that's what we need more of so that people can be aware. Because I think that people truly don't understand that is not a comment that is a welcome comment to somebody because they know they're not fine. So, yeah. So I think I think you're handling it in a great way, and I'm glad to hear that because I hope other people can pick up on that and use that strategy to let other folks know what you don't want to say to people, what you don't want to say when they have a brain injury, because it can hurt. Like you said, it makes you feel more isolated because I don't really understand. Another thing you mentioned,
yeah.
you said when going to the doctor, you can go in there and you can hear all these things and the doctor can tell you everything and you can walk out of it and not really understand what went on. And I think that one of the things that I always talk about is take somebody with you to the doctor if you can. And that's not even with just a brain injury. Even if you have anything, if you can take someone with you, an advocate, another pair of ears and eyes, to hear what the doctor is saying, because they're telling you lots of things. And when I go with David, I have a notepad in my pen, and I'm jotting things down, but I don't get everything. I don't even get everything. And David's trying to listen, and I'm trying to listen, and there's still so much stuff to hear. And you need to know that information, what the doctor is thinking about your recovery, your healing. And so I think that's a good thing to do is to have an advocate with you, have somebody with you in the doctor.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I, you make me think of now you would go with David. Now I would go alone. I would get
driven. Yeah, I know.
And because I couldn't drive, so I would go alone. And
mm-hmm.
there's a world of people out there who are going alone. I'm fine now. I'm fine. But there are people who are not. Need to be identified when they go to the emergency department and they're diagnosed with a brain injury. And they should not be given two pieces of paper that describe different things to be on the lookout for and with instructions to call their primary care doctor, you know, if they experience any of these things. That should not be happening anymore. So I speak of that in case anyone's listening, because people who live alone, who are expected to take care of themselves when their brain is not working properly, is not a great plan. Just not a great plan.
Yeah.
So I would love to see something change in that regard, because no one should be sent home to heal alone when their brain's not working. I'll say that one more time. It's just not a good plan. So, and that's part of the invisibility there.
And what do you do about it, though? Now, how do you even solve that problem? Because if somebody is living alone and they don't have anybody to take them to the doctor, there has to be some kind of social system set up in our country. And we know that's probably never going to happen. But you need something like that so that people can have a manager of some sort, a social worker manager, a case manager to oversee them. But, you know, that's not going to happen.
Well, that's exactly what you said.
Yeah, I know, but it's not going to happen. You think?
Absolutely. I do think. I believe that there's a huge need for that.
I do believe there's a need to put a group of people together to discuss that.
And I don't think anyone in the group would say that people whose brains aren't working properly don't need help. And
no,
because
I would totally agree.
Because people have been so silent for so long, and that's for different reasons, as I've cited. I could talk a lot about that, but I think that there needs to be and there will be a change whereby when people are identified as living alone, there will be assigned to them an advocate.
And they should be. There really should be. Like in the beginning, when you leave the hospital, you are assigned a therapist, you know, from your insurance, and they sometimes come to your home. Your occupational, your physical, your speech therapist go to your home and give you or a home care nurse. But that's always limited because it's on insurance. And so that is not going to be the answer. The insurance, I don't think, will be the answer. But it has to have some kind of social work system in place that automatically does that for folks, where they do have someone who's checking in on them. Because I don't even, I mean, if David could not have come home alone. There's no way. You know, so he would have had to be kept in a rehab facility. He would not have been able to be, if I weren't there. You know, if I wasn't there for him, I was his advocate. I was his caregiver. But, you know, and there are a lot of people that are sent home like them. I mean, David's insurance ran out. He had pretty good care for 3 months with his insurance, and then it ended. And then what do you do? And now this is happening to somebody who is, he was pretty well insured from his university job. What about the folks that don't have that that perk, I guess I could call it? What happens
to
them?
Well, you hope they have family. You hope they have family or friends or a church or an organization that they're part of where they have someone who can help. I mean, for me, I had a young friend who drove me, you know, when I needed to go to the doctor. I was very lucky to have her. And, you know, but she could only do that on occasion, you know. So,
right.
I mean, she wasn't home cooking meals or, you know. So,
yeah. That was going to be my next point. You can only use your family and friends for so long, you know, because everybody has his or her own life. And I always say this, for example, when David went to emergency room for the first surgery, people flooded in from all over the country to be with us. Nobody thought he was going to live. They came with their black suits, okay, and their black dresses. But so they came in and they all stayed from, that was a Thursday, they all left by Sunday night. They had jobs to go back to. So back to Michigan, back to Albuquerque, back to California, back to, Florida, I guess. You know, but everybody was there to help and it was wonderful. My village was there. But come that weekend, my village dispersed and everything came back to me. And it's understandable because everybody was there to support me and to help me as much as they could and to, you know, support David. But then they have to go back to their own lives. So like you said, your friend was wonderful in fact that she was able to drive you, but she can't do that forever because she also has a life. And I think you and I were very lucky to have that support system in place for as long as we might have had it. But many people don't have anything like that. You know, they don't have the family support. They may not have the friend support. They may not be in a financial situation even, or their friends to be able to help out that way. So it's a really complicated problem. And so what happens then?
Well, that's why I wrote the Concussion Conversation Starter Journal.
Okay.
That's why I designed that, because it's perfectly designed for someone who's having problems communicating. All you have to do is circle a few words, fill in a few blanks, and put it in the hands of your doctor or therapist so that when you go there, they have to address those things that are on your mind, that if without that in your hand, you might just get your blood pressure taken and told about some other person who's not doing that well, and, you know, like my doctor did, and then be sent out the door. See you next week. Remember to drink your water, get your rest. So
take your aspirin in the morning.
But, you know, I know myself, for me, when I sensed that the only thing that was going to push me through to get me back, to bring me back to where I needed to be so I could communicate with you right now and other people, was to force myself to start speaking and saying and doing things in very uncomfortable situations. I had to put myself back into the situations I wanted to be in, but I knew I couldn't be myself in those situations, but I still had to do it. And, you know, when I could do that and practice that and then talk about it, I knew that people like me who've had a brain injury, if they could talk about what's going on with them, it would pull them out of the hole faster. Because there is something that happens when we communicate with one another. And to quantify it right now, I can't do that. I'm not a scientist, but I do know as a human that when I have the ability and the experience of sharing with another human being what's happening within me, it reawakens parts of my brain that were laying dormant and starts tying things back together again. That's what happened for me. I started to communicate. I attended storytelling. I made myself do storytelling. I couldn't remember the beginning, the end of the story, even the middle of the story, but I made myself do it. And every time I tell the story would be different because I couldn't remember it. But I do think that that's what could – everyone who's living alone needs to be given a book like mine. And keep track of what you're feeling. So when you go back and see the doctor,
they can see, oh, this is bothering you. You know, your vision's bothering you. Your balance is bothering you. Oh, we have to get this person for that and this person for that.
Uh-huh.
That's what needs to happen. Otherwise, you just keep doing the same thing over and over again, and you don't make any progress at all. And that's what I see in a lot of social media groups. I feel horrible for people because huge perception out there that, well, my doctor told me X, Y, and Z, and the X, Y, and Z are, you're probably not going to get better. And I don't know where they hand out those crystal balls, and they need to stop with those statements.
I know.
But
yes.
Really, it's not helpful. And so the way we're doing things. Things need to be changed, and they can change, and there can be advocates. There really can. You know, the same way health coaches now, you know, that are coming into the doctor's offices and being part of that. Things can change, and I know they will. And as more people become accustomed to being aware that their brains can improve, and it's like, you know, a muscle. You have to exercise it. You have to use it.
Yeah.
And the more you use it, the better it gets. But for those individuals who believe the doctor that tells them they won't get better, I can guarantee you those people will not get better.
Yeah. You know, and I totally understand what you're saying there, because every time we would go to the doctor, I would hang on to the carrot that he held in front of me. Our doctors never told us that David would not get better. They always said, well, we're going to try this now. We're going to try this, and then we're going to try this. Every time we walked out, and I called them carrots. I said, David, well, this is the carrot we have this week, you know. He wants you to try these new glasses because he thinks that that's going to help your sight. Or they want you to try this, because this might help your balance. But it was those carrots that you have to hang on to. And I think it's unconscionable for any doctor to say you're not going to get better or put a limit to your time of getting better. Saying after, you know, in the beginning, we would hear, well, you've got 6 months to get better. I did hear that from the neurosurgeon. And I was like devastated. 6 months? It's going to take him 6 months? That's an ungodly amount of time. Well, here I am sitting at 19 years, and we're still looking for carrots. You know what I mean? But then it became like, oh, it was a year, and then it became 2 years. And I haven't heard much longer than 2 years from any medical person. But still, we do see things in people that have improved over the years. Because, like you said, the brain is a muscle, and it relearns. It can reconnect. It has synapses that can reconnect and make new pathways in your brain. It's very it's elastic. It's so it can remold itself in some things. Not everything. Not everything in your brain can. Now, the unfortunate part of that is it takes a long time. You know, generally, to grow these new brain endings and everything. I knew at one time what it was when I looked it up and everything, but I don't recall it now. But I know it takes a long time. So you do have to be patient, but that doesn't mean you stop. That means you keep working at it. You keep trying to improve. And one of the things I thought with David, I love the fact that despite the fact that he has very serious balance challenge, he doesn't stop walking. He will walk all over the place. He won't say, Donna, will you get me this? Donna, will you do this? You know, he takes care of business himself. It's not easy. I know it's not easy for him as he, you know, makes his way down the hall to get something that I could have dashed down the hall and picked up and brought back 10 minutes before he even asked for it almost, you know. But he does his own stuff. And that is hard. But it's making his life better, and it's making him stronger. He would exercise all the time. It's like, I can't even do that. I don't even want to do exercise, you know. But he will, and it's difficult. He was a person who exercised before his brain injury, and something that he still does now. But it's hard. he can only do like 2 or 3 reps of something, you know, little dumbbells, not the barbells, not those big things, those little dumbbells, 5, 10 pounds, 20 pounds, whatever he does. You know, it's like he'll do that every morning. And like I said, it's not easy, but it strengthens his body. And he needs his body to be strengthened in order for him to do what he needs to do just in normal daily living, because his body has been compromised so much with the physical disabilities. So, yes, what you're saying is you have to put out the effort. You said you did the storytelling, that it was hard for you. You couldn't do the beginning, middle, and end and get them all right at the same time every time. But actually, that's not a bad idea.
I was in a room full of people.
Yeah. Oh, I know.
I had to do that in front of a lot of people.
But it's look at all the different variations of the story you get.
Yeah. I know. There were some really good ones.
I think it's cool. But, I mean, that's just being silly here, too, you know. But I'm saying you're pushing yourself. And when you push yourself, you gain. You make gains. Whatever kind of gains you're heading for or whatever. And, you know, that's what people have to do. A friend of mine, she's the co-author of my third book that we're finishing up now, Deb Brandon, talks about her parents who both had brain injuries of some sort. They live in Israel. Now, they're older, okay? So I understand, too. But she says that they've kind of given up. They sit like lumps now, and they're not pushing themselves to do any exercises or their therapies. And, of course, they're not improving. Well, that's also affecting their mental ability, because that makes you sad when you're feeling like that. So that's just one example, and I can talk about that because that's going to be in the book. But, it's just a matter of, like, you have to push yourself in order to improve. And you know what? We know that just in normal everyday life. If you don't do well in school, if you don't push yourself in a trade, you're not going to be able to do anything. And, you know, nobody wants to sit at home and go to school all day and then come home and do homework or, you know, but yet we do it. Why? Because we want to improve ourselves. Or your mom wants you to improve yourself, and so you're going to do it anyway. But you know what I mean? It's just they say no pain, no gain, and I don't mean pain, but I mean you do have to put in the effort in order to get ahead.
Only way you want to put in the effort, I believe, one thing that helps you to want to put in the effort is to have a reason to do it. And the reason has to be something more than just, I don't know, for me, I'm driven by my wish, my intent to make a difference and help other people understand this and get through it. And to contribute to a body of knowledge. But there are a lot of other things I'd rather be doing right now, I can assure you. But this is a very big area, and it's not going to be fixed by just one person. It's going to take a whole community of people who can talk about what's going on with them, so that the doctors and the researchers and people who need information can input that. And the doctors who have different methods and have seen different things work for their patients or clients, everyone needs to get together on this right now, because it's just not the neurologist who's operating, you know, the SPECT scan that, you know, can help people with certain aspects of their brain injury, that's going to be the panacea of help for everybody. It's not going to be that way. It's very complex, isn't it? And we need a lot of different ways and of examining, of quantifying, and then of addressing.
Mm-hmm. I know. I totally agree with that. And again, let's go back to the cancer thing. We had to start somewhere, you know, and they started the cancer, and that I'm sure everybody wanted that to happen immediately, but it just doesn't. It takes the compiling the data and learning more and more and more, and then eventually we know a lot about it. And that's where we are right now in brain injury, I think. We're compiling the data. We're learning a lot. People are talking about it. You're here. I'm here. I have a lot of friends that are out there on podcasts and talking about brain injury. We're trying to get the word out. And like you said, you know, there are other things that I might want to do, but I really feel, for me too, like you did, I feel really intent on helping others to learn more about this, because when it happened to me, I was totally floored. I didn't. And I say it happened to me because it happened to my husband. And so it happened to both of us. I'm not, and as I mentioned earlier, I didn't have the physical impact of it, but I have the residual. And I want people to be able to understand, if you do get a brain injury, what are some of your ways out? If you are a caregiver, what are some of the things you can do to help? And, So we do. It takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of effort to do all these kinds of things. But thank God there are people that are willing to do it. And I know so many people. I mean, the people that come on my show are amazing because they're willing to share not only their stories, but their knowledge that they've gained through the years. You've got 9 years of brain injury knowledge wrapped up in you. I have other people that have more than me, you know, more than David's, 19 years. And we're all sharing that information freely to help others. And I hope that I can just hope that people are tapping in and picking up something. And I don't expect everybody to think, oh my God, this is the end all and I learned everything I need to know about brain injury. No, but you might have gotten one little tip. You might have decided to go read the Concussion Conversation Starter and help yourself out at the doctor. You might want to go check out Heal Your TBI, the 7-Step Approach for Recovering from a Traumatic Brain Injury, both books written by Gail Wakin. And you might pick up some tips from them and something that can help to make your life just a little bit easier. You also might, and I'm going to plug my own book right here too, you also might read Prisoners Without Bars, A Caregiver's Tale, which is a really heart-wrenching story, but it's very open. I mean, I just bared my soul on this book and told you everything. And yeah, some of you are going to say, gosh, that happened to me. That happened to me. Oh, that happened to me. And some of you are going to say, no, that mine doesn't resemble this at all. But I bet you everyone is going to come away with something out of the book that they can relate to. And that's what you were talking about, Gail, is the communication, telling your story, letting other people tell their stories, because that gives you power. When you're able to have a voice about about something that's going on that is so intense in your life, like brain injury. If you go to survivingtraumaticbraininjury.com, that's a place where I have, 160, 180 interviews from caregivers, from survivors, from probably mostly caregivers and survivors on there. That's what it is. And they tell their stories. I'm giving them a platform to tell their story, to give them a voice. And again, when anybody wants to go visit that site and tap into somebody's story, you can say, geez, that reminds me of what happened to me, or boy, I handled it differently than that. Maybe I should have tried that, or maybe if they tried this, they would be better off, or... Oh, and sometimes people leave their emails there too, and you can contact them in particular to talk to them about it. So we have to get the word out. That's what we're trying to do. We want to have people to have a voice and know what's going on. And at that point, I'm going to have to say, Gail, our time is almost up. We have another show coming on very, very shortly. So this was terrific. I had a wonderful time chatting with you on this. And I know we could probably go on and on and on, but I would probably get kicked off. I did that once. I did go over. And the other host came on and opened their show. And I was like, goodbye, everybody. And I didn't get to finish my words. So let me just say thank you so much, Gail Wakin, for joining me this evening. It was a great talk. We learned a lot from your informative discussion, as I knew we would. And you can always learn more about Gail by going to survivingtraumaticbraininjury.com and reading her interview, her survivor speak out interview, or listening to her radio show. Go to On the Air show menu, but just put Gail Wakin, W-A-I-T-K-U-N, into the search box, and you'll find out tons and tons of stuff. Of course, you can also Google her and find all her books on Amazon. I just did, but I've read her book. I've read one of her books. I haven't read her other one. The other one sounds fascinating, too. So you can read interviews, like I said, about the survivors and caregivers. There's a category for brain injury resources and itty-bitty giant steps and guest bloggers. There's just so much on that site. So please go check it out. If you will have an accomplishment that you would like to share with me and have me publish on my site, you can contact me at, this is a long one, it's my whole name, Donna O'Donnell. Figgersky@gmail.com. And don't forget, again, don't forget my book, Prisoners Without Bars, A Caregiver's Tale. Read it, love it, and review it. Please, I'd love for you to do that. So please tune in next Sunday to hear Lisa Dreyer. She is the host on Mess with MS. And technically, The Moving Forward podcast, Stories of Triumph with Coach KJ and Dr. Valentina, should start at 7 p.m. Pacific time. So once again, Gail, thank you so much for joining me this evening. And everyone else, I'll see you in 2 weeks. All right. Good night, everybody. Good night, Gail.
Good night. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.